Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Eason here with the Military Medium. It's Dean McMurray, and this is your Daily Dose of Happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today, and we're going to get things started with an email from Daniel, who wrote in last week, and he was asking for a little bit of help. He's asked for some help in the past, but he asked for a little bit more this time around. He sent two different messages, one on Tuesday, and then on Friday in a show with Linda, I asked her to take a stab at it, and so she drew a card that, based on the email that we got as a follow-up from him afterward, pretty much hit the spot. But I figured I'd bring both of them in and let the military medium applaud his, his psychic magic wand and see what he can do. So anyway, here's what Daniel had to say. He says, I just figured that I would ask the Psychic Friends Network you've created here a question. He says, there's a lot of things up in the air in my life right now. It's not freaking me out too much, but I would like some guidance from the other side. Any help would be appreciated. Thank you. And he loves the show. Keep up the good work. And then as a follow-up to Friday's show, he wrote, I never asked this outright before, but I've always wondered. My dad died when I was 12. I've only had one visitation dream with him ever shortly after he died. My grandma, however, is in my dreams quite a bit. I've set intentions to have visitations with him, and I don't need it. I guess I would just like to hear from him. Is there a reason why I haven't had a visitation from him, and is there anything I need to hear from anyone?
Love it. You know, and that last question, Walt, is one that is all too familiar, and all too often people ask why, I've set the intention for mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. And, you know, and sometimes it's everybody but, you know, the individual that you're wanting to step forward. And so everybody wanting to know why or, you know, what's going on. And maybe I'm just not understanding the first one. Is he just wanting general guidance, from the other side?
Yeah, he was in the first email. He was very nonspecific. He just said nothing particular was freaking him out, but he just wanted some guidance.
Sure. Well, here's I guess, and Daniel's his name, correct? Right. So, Daniel, here's the first thing that I get is when I connect to the energy around, and when I'm listening to the other side, is the first thing that I feel is like I'm walking through Jell-O, right? And I know that sounds like an odd sensation, but it could be, and if I'm understanding this correctly, maybe some of the sensations that you're feeling right now, perhaps not getting the traction or the outcomes that you're wanting in life right now. So that in the aspect of walking through Jell-O, just kind of that slow-mo, you know, just, whoa, everything is kind of thick and heavy, and it's like, what is going on? So, but the thing that I do hear very clearly, this is coming from a female on your mother's side of the family, and she has her hair more up, and you would think of the old-fashioned plastic curlers, right? So with the old home firm type. You know, so one of the things that I get with her is, she keeps on just saying, hang in there, because meaning, I'm understanding her to mean that this is just, you know, just like everything else, we run in cycles, the same with energy. So if you're going through a little bit tougher time right now, just feeling like, and again, you know, walking through Jell-O or things aren't manifesting quite the way that you want them at work or in life right now, just hang on. Cause that change is coming up. It doesn't mean that you get to sit back though, because you do get kind of the finger. It's not she's not flipping you off, but it's kind of like the stern look. If you can see my finger, it's the pointer finger.
Well, actually it's a podcast. They can't see it. Only people who are watching YouTube can see it.
Well, yeah. If you watch a new, you know, I got my pointer finger out here and it's kind of like that, you know, stern loving, like Kate trying to make the point and saying this isn't a time just to sit back. And I think we've talked about this on the show before, Walt. Is about even if spirit and the universe are going to show up, you need to put things in action. And so get really clear on what you want and what you want to do, and then start taking steps to go after it. And that's the biggest thing, is making movement regardless, because I kind of feel like you're in some type of analysis paralysis and you're sitting in a cycle of spinning. That's what I feel like. Now, I want to jump over very specifically. I want to go over to the aspect of, you know, why. Now, refresh me on the second question again, Walt. Sorry.
Yeah, sure. He says he has his father died when he was 12. He's only had one visitation with him. Wondered why his grandmother has been in his dreams a lot. And, of course, it sounds like who you might be referring to there.
Right.
But why hasn't he heard from his father? And is there anything else that anybody else wants to tell him? And apparently somebody in the curlers said, yes, here's something I want to tell you.
Right.
Stay with the program.
Stay with the program. Well, I really feel her guidance was the first part. However, you know, obviously, could that be words of wisdom for the second aspect? Sure. But here's the thing, because the ego wants answers, and the ego wants connection one more time. I don't care who you are. We want to connect one more time. Because we love those individuals and sure. Spirit. And rightfully so. But here's the thing is when we detach, or if you're able at some level to detach from the wanting, and I know that's hard to conceptualize, or the need to, I need you to come to me in spirit, you know, in dream state, and just allow and saying, you know what? I trust that when it's time, it will. And I do get that there is, you know, that your dad, Daniel, is going to show up in a bigger way. And it's kind of waiting for, I know what it might sound like, but it's almost waiting for you to catch up. And it's like, coming into play in a later stage of your life with him in spirit, almost like a spirit teacher, if that makes sense. Ooh. And that's what I feel. So we're kind of coming, you know, saying, understand that he's always there. It doesn't mean that he's left you. Hey, you're on your own. His spirit's always there. Whether you feel the connection or not. But the thing that I would share is I feel, and what I see is I'm shown kind of arcs of light that come out from your timeline and go forward of you and come back into the timeline in a future point or date and time. So I'm understanding is almost kind of like, hey, I'm waiting for you to catch up. I'm waiting for you for this time, whenever that is. And I don't get a date. But you know, when that time kind of alignment with the timeline, when it's supposed to be the divine timing aspect, when you step into that bigger role, whatever that is, then I feel that you have this almost kind of like reestablishing a relationship with your dad now in spirit, and it's completely different. You know, I kind of go back to, you know, when I first started developing, I never knew my grandmother on my dad's side, and where she showed up. And so did my grandfather briefly. And it was, not only was it very moving, but I had to learn how to have a relationship in a sense with a loved one, you know, in spirit, and where she became a very big, part of my spiritual development. But, so anyways, for you though, Daniel, is, trust in that process, and try to find a space within yourself to not, and I know this might sound hard at the moment, but to, you know, saying, hey, Dad, I know that you're there, but, you know, trusting that when it's time, you're going to show up. And trying to have patience with that. That's the hardest part. It's like, come on already. You know, what's up with this divine timing piece? And, we want to rush it along, but, there's something with it. And I always tell people have patience. So I hope that answers his questions.
I think that's pretty good. I'm sure that he's going to get a lot of value out of that. And you raise, actually, we could probably do a show on what you raised there for a topic, because you bring up the idea of, how did you phrase it, trying to disconnect from wanting. And yeah, you're right. That is a tough thing to learn to do. Yeah. It's something that even when you learn it, you still end up having to relearn it.
You do.
It gets easier over time. I mean, you get better at it over time.
You got to be really, in my experience, well, at least for me, I guess, I have to be really conscious about it. I haven't got to the point thus far to be just like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just being, and you know, I'm just, you know, it's no, you know, I still have that part of me that I want this. And then I try to reach for it. And the more I reach for it, the further it escapes my reach. And what I found was for me personally, the more I let go and just allowed the process to happen, the more I was connected to the true source of, I guess the situation or the journey, right? And where it was easier to connect when it was time instead of making something that it was not. Because there was an aspect, whether I want to admit it or not, of my own ego and my own brain that was trying to construct something that I wanted in a way that I wanted it presented. Mm. And so whether that was a connection to a loved one, whether that was a connection to getting spirit information in the way that I wanted it, and the universe is like, hello, you know, have you met us? You know, it's like, we will give you what you need when you need it and in the way, you know, that you will understand it, not the way you think, you know. And that was so interesting because so many times when I would get on my own personal high horse or an emotional roller coaster, that I would be quintessentially smacked in the face and kind of taught to eat some humble pie and be like, hello, you know, I kind of sound like a teenager, but, you know, in a sense of just like, do you know, you know? So yeah, kind of interesting.
One thing that I've kind of learned over time, and I'm still learning to apply it, but I find it's pretty effective. If I know that I'm kind of grasping and hanging on to something and it's slowing me down, I try to remind myself, I know of a lot of different ways to what we call raise the vibration, get into a happier place. And yeah. And I aim to do that specifically in those situations because when I'm in the happier place, it's easier to let go of stuff. It's just easier to not only feel good about what's going on, but it's also easier to just, you know, just to let go of it, to not be so worked up and caught up in whether or not the thing has happened yet. To actually feel good with what's going on leading up to it. And when we're able to let go that way, when we're able to feel good enough that we can let go, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, it just gets easier. And that's what I was trying to express a moment ago. Over time, it does get easier, you know? So the more that we get into that higher flying place, the more that it gets easier, it gets easier to get easier.
Right,
is what I'm trying
right,
to say.
Right, right, right. Well, and I think a thing to remember too is, I think you find your own way through it. Like you navigate your own maybe challenges or obstacles because there's so many things that are unique unto the individual, and sometimes the, you know, maybe what Walt or Dean McMurray experiences as obstacles are different than maybe somebody like Daniel or somebody else out there, right? And so like you share, Walt, is over time it gets a little bit easier because I think you learn through trial and error.
Lots of it,
you know, lots of saying, "Ooh, I've come across this before, let me you know." So but a lot, you know, it's like whether you have a lot of patience or not, but of course everybody's going to go, patience, grasshopper, right? And it's like,
right.
You can be impatient all you want, and it's like the ketchup that's not leaving the bottle. You just got to wait until it's time. It's like, hello, you know, it's like kind of one of those things. It looks like an old Heinz commercial, right?
Right.
So
right. That's funny.
I don't know why I went to the ketchup analogy, but hey, that's what popped in my head. So
Hey, you also mentioned something else, paralysis by analysis.
Oh, paralysis analysis, yeah.
Which is something I'm very familiar with because I was caught in that trap for years, and I still can get into that trap if I'm not really careful, with a lot of help from fellow co-hosts, including Joel Elston, who was on the show for many years. I finally have mostly let go of that. But boy, oh boy, that can really hold you back. And it's a great way to kind of latch on to, oh God, why hasn't it shown up here? Well, I'll just keep analyzing this thing to death, because if I just analyze it to death, I'll find a way around it.
Right.
Of course, that doesn't play that way, but that's what the brain tells you, right?
Right. No, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's, a great reminder that, whether you have, how do I want to say it? A great network around you that tends to push you out of your comfort zone and saying, just do it already. You know, there's a million self-help books out there. And I was listening to one on audio. It was something about Napoleon Hill, but they were, about the aspect of analysis paralysis and sitting, got to have everything figured out. And they're why, you know, when your why is big enough, you know, the how shows up. And there are so many of us that gets in the weeds, myself included, at times, and be like, well, how does that look? Like I need to see it, because I'm a visual guy. And so, you know, if I understand it in a visual means, then I would probably be more on board. But other times, maybe I'm very hesitant. You know, the interesting aspect of when, you know, I got a tremendous wife that gives me a lovingly boot in the butt at times, and was like, what are you waiting for to do that? And then I'm like, I don't know. And then sometimes, you know, is it analysis paralysis? Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Other times, do I feel that maybe not all the pieces are together? Sometimes there's a divine timing aspect. But if you're not sure, you know, you can take steps to move forward with it. Doesn't mean that you have to certainly pick up the proverbial football and run towards a touch. You know, just picking something up and making steps towards that goal are going to, you know, change. It changes the dynamic of the energy. And when you do that, you're changing the trajectory and the outcome, because you're making a step or steps to whatever outcome you want. But, and if it's not time, then it's not going to work out at that point. But I always say, you know, sometimes it's mired in procrastination. And I always call when my wife tries to call me out on that, I'm like, my dear, that's a divine timing. It's not procrastination.
Yeah, we got an excuse for everything.
Yeah. That's usually what I hear. I usually hear some colorful words too, but no. But you got it. You know what? I think they always say behind great people, there's even greater people supporting them. And I think there is no truer statement than that, because you got to have your cheerleaders, but you also need to have folks that will call you out on your own BS.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a mentor, whether it's a coach, whether it's a great spouse or significant loved one, whatever it is, find that person that can call you out. And, you know, you may not like it. And I'm not saying things that you like. And, you know, and there's a difference between me being mean and calling you up, but saying, you know, we don't want to, you know, sometimes when saying, hey, you know, you're sitting there spinning about this, what are the details, right? And you just need to do it. And saying, you know what, thanks for giving me the push, because I wouldn't have got that book done if you wouldn't have gave me the push. I wouldn't have got that, you know, whatever it was done, or I wouldn't have taken steps to reach out and do that or connect or, you know, and it can pay off huge dividends to people. It's like, how much, what is it worth to somebody, I guess? But anyways.
You gave me two interesting thoughts there. as you were describing that so beautifully. The first thought was about taking those initial steps. And I think one thing, I know this is true, this was true for me, it's not so much anymore, mm-hmm. but at one point it was mm-hmm. definitely true for me. I would be afraid of taking those first few steps, thinking I'd go in the wrong direction. I'd take steps that wouldn't work. Like you said, I mean, they don't always work out right, you know? Which could be, that can stop you all by itself, just by anticipating, oh, well, yeah, but what if I take the wrong steps?
Right.
And it wasn't until I started doing this show and talking to people like you, like Joel, like Linda, like Cindy, like Wendy, all these other people that I've talked with over the years, is I began to learn it doesn't matter. When you start taking your steps and they're going in the wrong direction, you get all these signs saying, hey, you're going in the wrong direction. It's the other way, bud.
Right.
And you just have to pay attention for, you know, the various signs that come your way. And it doesn't take long. It comes pretty darn quickly.
Well, I guess I have a question when it comes to that, though, Walt. Is there really a wrong direction?
No.
You know, it might not. I mean, granted, whatever you're going towards, whatever goal, if you go in the opposite direction, it might show up or it might take longer for you to accomplish it if you,
take different
turns.
If you're heading from New York to Los Angeles and you find yourself heading toward Boston, that's pretty much the wrong direction. But all you have to do is turn around, you'll still get to Los Angeles. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility yet, you know?
So I got a interesting story talking about wrong direction. So I was in, Northeastern North Dakota, up by the Canadian border, doing readings one summer. And it was for a group of people. And I was there all day, 8 hours. It was crazy. But it was expected severe storms. And, of course, we get a lot of tornadoes as well. And it was interesting. They had heavy rains and winds, all that great stuff. And as soon as I got done the last reading, the tornado sirens, which were right by this people's house, started going off. And I was like, well, I guess that's my cue, and finished up and said my goodbyes. I'm out of here. And it was raining so hard, I couldn't see. And I knew that there was it was a proverbial crossroads where I came at the stop sign. It was left or right. And all I said was, I kind of looked up, you know, at the heavens, if you will. And I said, I need a little help here. I knew that there was, you know, tornadoes in the area. I knew the weather was super nasty. And I said, I could use some help here, and, you know, kind of saying a prayer. And so I just felt guided to take a right. I went well over an hour out of my way of this drive. I was like, I have no clue where I was.
Right.
And I was like, and the raining cats and dogs. Well, here to come to find out, and when I finally come to a town, right? I was like, how did I end up here? And I was driving through God knows who where. Right. And when I looked at the radar, when I finally pulled out my GPS or whatever, here, if I would have taken a left instead of a right, I would have been in front of the supercell storm that moved through.
Yeah.
But instead I took a right and I went way out. And what I did was allowed the storm to kind of come through. And then I came in behind it.
Right.
And it was just serendipitous. So proverbially, by taking the wrong turn, if you will, in a sense, it saved me. So there was no wrong turn. It was like, yeah, I added some time to your schedule or, you know, your route, but yeah, you came back out where you wanted to. And so I guess that brings me to, you know, the question, is there really any wrong turn? It might take you longer to get to your goal. Like it took me, you know, well over an extra hour to get home that night, but I was safe. And, you know, or maybe in somebody else's, scenario, maybe they didn't lose something financially. Maybe there was something, health-wise, maybe, you know, emotionally, whatever it was. Oh, yeah. A lot of people, we look at it from but it added to my discomfort or my, you know, and, sometimes we can be a lot more, how do I want to say it? It wouldn't be. Yeah. Well, you know, we can be in a much the scenario could be much heavier or much more severe sometimes if we're not maybe in a quintessentially taking the wrong turn or a detour. How about we call it a detour instead of the wrong turn? You know,
well, that also that led to a thought that came to my head. I mean, you heard the tornado sirens and elected to go home. I mean, you could have just as easily decided, you know, I'm hearing tornado sirens. Where's the nearest cellar?
Right.
And waited the storms out. You know, there are plenty of signs that come along the way, but your point is a valid one that there really is not a wrong direction. Very often we are guided to the better place. Louise and I experience that when we're traveling all the time. You know, we'll be driving along on a superhighway and for whatever reason, she'll get the idea, well, let's go get lunch now, even though, you know, it's an hour away from lunch, but we'll go get lunch now. And so we'll get off the highway and then we can't get back onto the highway. And we're taking this long detour. And when we finally get back on the highway, we find that we just left this massive 25-mile block.
Like,
okay. How did we do that?
Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Even though I was cussing the whole time. Thank you.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Can you imagine?
I think.
Yeah, can't you imagine some, you know, some divine entity going, you'd think these guys would be grateful, right?
Right.
And, you know, and I think that brings up a great point is that like in the moment when we're like, oh, I can't believe it. We can't even get back on and we're frustrated and, you know, maybe we're hot and we're tired and it's like, I just want to go home. And we know it's the shortest route, but yet the universe is playing such a big game from 30,000 feet or whatever, right? They see the big picture. And we only see this tiny minuscule piece and saying, yeah, but you, by keeping you from doing this, we're really allowing you to, you know, to come in contact with many more riches, whether that's not get stuck in this traffic jam, whether accident, whatever.
Yeah. So and you use the right word there, gratitude. Because it's a hard thing to learn at first, but if we can learn, and Louise and I, again, we try to do this whenever we run into it. If you run into a block in the road, literally, you know, your road that you're driving on is blocked for whatever reason, and you have to go around it. Say, thank you. You're trying to guide me away from something. I don't know what it is. I don't think I even want to know what it is, but thank you.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing too is like, I love playing a game, I call it the traffic light game, right? And so what I try to do is I try to feel into and connect to the energy of the electricity and the mechanics of the traffic light, right? And so, you know, trying to feel when it's going to turn green, all this stuff, but, and almost sometimes you can get it where it, you go for miles and it's all green. I'm just, you know, going, thank you. Oh my God, this is cool. And, but then there's other times when you're in a rush and red light, red light, red light.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, hey, that's just a reminder that you need to stop and breathe and say thank you and saying, you know what? It's okay. We're going to get there in time. There's nothing I can do. We're just going to continue, you know, and we're not going to speed, you know, so kind of being in that gratitude of letting go, cause it would be very easy to be going, oh my God, I can't believe I hit this red light and we're going to be late. And we left the house. We should have left the house 20 minutes ago. And here we are, you know, it's like, let's just go, let's tone it down a bit and go, let's think about
the road rage. You also get yourself in the place where you can get a better result. Which is,
right?
God, how about that?
Well, and so many times that I have found when I start showing some gratitude in that aspect and finding a space of inner peace that, a lot of cool things happen. It's almost like, and I don't know if you've had this experience, Walt, but have you ever had a moment of like lost time? And in a sense of like where you like, wait a minute, that I've driven this route several times before and it's always taken approximately, if I drive the speed limit, approximately this length of time to drive it. How did I get from here to there in significantly shorter amount of time? And your mind is just like short circuiting, like I can't compute and we know it's something bigger than us. But, and so it's interesting that it's almost like when you, you know, shift dimensions, I don't know, open a a portal. I don't know what happens, but sometimes.
I don't know either, but it's odd. Yeah. Especially if you're really cognizant of what's going on. And there have been a few times where I haven't been quite so cognizant, but I can remember one where I was definitely, I was aware, I was conscious completely. And it was just a little trip from where we live to where the nearest Walmart is. And it's basically just you go down one road, hang a right, and you go out probably about 3 miles or so, and it's on the left there. And I took that right. I started going on the road, and I mean, I know that whole road. I know everything. I know all the traffic lights. I know the traffic pattern. It's, you know, it's a state highway. It's not difficult to know everything that's there. And I got to like the first or second marker, so to speak, out of maybe 7 or 8 markers.
Yeah.
And then as I'm looking at the fact that I'm at that marker, all of a sudden I'm at the second to last marker, like bang, like, wait a minute. What just happened? Yeah. I mean, that should have taken another 5 minutes and it didn't.
Right.
What just happened? And it spooked me.
Right.
Because
it's like, did I black out? Did I?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Did I?
So, but, yeah. Well, I did. I asked myself exactly that question. Was I just unconscious? Was I just like, you know, auto driving? You know, you can get into that auto driving mode.
Yep.
No, I wasn't. I know I wasn't. That's what freaked me out. I knew that I was very aware of everything that I was doing at that point.
Right.
I was not in that driving in that fog where you automatically drive your way there. Right. I was very conscious and bang, all of a sudden I was in this other place. Like, whoa, what was that?
Well, and then when I have that experience, then I'm like, hey, can we do that on longer distance? can I do that? Can we do that? And,
yeah, let's knock the 2 hour trip down to 20 minutes. It makes it a whole lot nicer.
Yeah. God, that'd be cool. You know, I won't tell anybody.
Right.
Yeah. Be like, boy, that'd really cut down on some gas. Yeah. It is so fascinating, but it's usually what I have found though, the correlation is, at least for me personally, is when I have experienced that, I have always been in a state of gratitude. It's like everything aligned up, right? It's like all the green lights, everything was like, go, all systems go, right? And it's just like all the boxes were checked at that moment, the planets aligned, whatever, for whatever reason. And whether I drove into a portal or whatever, maybe some ET flipped a switch. I don't know, but it's like, hey, let's mess with this one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's like, whoa, check that out. And they got a good laugh. You know, it's like,
it sounds like a Far Side cartoon, right?
Yeah, right. Like, you know, where they're cutting maybe sections out of the road and like making it shorter or something.
Mess with the aliens day, right?
Right. I don't know. But yeah, that is just a very cool phenomenon, and just to, I don't know, it's just really cool to experience and then trying to figure it out. It's, and you know, but, you know, after a while, it's just like my brain starts to melt and it's like, why do you need to figure it out? Like, just enjoy it.
I think there's just a piece of us that wants to know.
I know.
But you're right. At some point, the brain just kind of derails. And so you kind of fall into the place of, well, I don't know what the answer is. So I guess I'll just go with it. You kind of give up after a while.
Well, and you know, and let's talk about that for a minute, like the brain figuring stuff out. So things that are super, super complex, like uber, like crazy, out of this world complex. And I don't know if you've had this experience as well, Walt, but there has been moments where I've thought about it and hashed over, like trying to even imagine and understand of it. And it's all of a sudden, like all the puzzle pieces come together, and this is not a psychic medium thing. It's just like, I don't know. It's like a cosmic understanding, right? It's like if you were all of a sudden given the meaning of the universe, whatever, in an instant. But as soon as it's given, it's taken away. And it's just like, no. Because it's like an all-knowing. It's like, oh, my God.
It's like right
and
on, then the, it's gone. On the tip and it's of your like, tongue. Yeah.
And trying to remember it. It's like, what was that? And it's just all jumbled again. It's just like all these pieces. And it's like, oh, my God, everything just made sense just for a split hair of a second.
Right. Right.
And, you know, a nanosecond. And I was like, oh, how do I connect to that again? Maybe, maybe I threw it out the window when I went through that little time warp. I don't know.
Hey, you never know.
Did some universal littering. Maybe I don't know.
I love it. Universal littering.
I don't know. Yeah. You know how fast you were going?
I mentioned earlier there were two things that I wanted to respond to.
Yeah.
One we just talked about. The other one, you made a reference to, it's good to have people who you trust. I don't, this is my
yes.
first thing I read in the way you said it, but basically people you trust who can speak truth to you, so to speak.
Yes. Yes.
And I wanted to pile on with that one because that ties in really nicely with the theme of these talks that I've been putting together.
Yeah.
Doing public speaking.
Yes.
Because my dual theme is building self-love and building social connectedness. This is the
right.
social connectedness piece. And I want to emphasize it because one thing I didn't know early on was the tremendous value in extending the social network and building
right.
the depth of the social network.
Right.
And realizing that, I mean, I was very glad when I met Louise, for instance. And I relied heavily on that relationship, and she relied heavily on it as well. But she really figured out earlier than I did, we needed to have other people in the social network to rely on.
Because
you can
yeah.
rely too much on that one person.
Right,
you know?
Right. That you can get burnt out. You don't, yeah.
Well, maybe not so much the burnout. You just need the diversity. I mean,
sure,
the primary relationship has always remained great for us. We've never
right.
had an issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
But relying solely on the primary relationship, yeah. that's not a really good thing because
right.
you don't grow very well that way.
Right, right.
You need to have the additional inputs from other perspectives. That's one of the reasons why I like to do this show the way I do it with all the
right.
different co-hosts. I get so many different perspectives on this broad subject that we do.
Sure.
That I just learn by leaps and bounds, and I know the audience does as well. But when you limit yourself to one or two like that, they may be
right.
deep, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's good having that depth of relationship. You just don't get the breadth of it. The breadth is
right.
where a lot of it comes into. Similarly, you don't want to have a broad series of relationships, none of which are deep. You got to have
right.
both. Both components have to be in there. But I want to get more of your take on that.
I was going to also say with that is – you know, there are some people, and I was going to bring this on the converse aspect, saying, okay, Dean Walt, that's great. I love the aspect of building a social aspect, but guess what? Don't really have any friends. Maybe have a couple coworkers. Maybe they're going to college, Walt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe saying, yeah, I know a couple people in my classes, but we're really not friends. And I wouldn't really call them what I would say is my cheerleaders. And maybe, you know, so maybe they don't have a lot of people in their corner. What would you say to the individuals out there that maybe really doesn't have a organic core of cheerleaders to either give, you know, support them, give them truth when they need it, and provide a safe space for them?
That was a question that I had to face head on early on and failed to come up with an answer for the longest time.
Mm.
But it's also one of the feeders that led me to my current talk, because the reason I have those two aspects to the current talk is that one feeds the other. The idea of building self-love, one of the great advantages of building your self-love is that it also builds your self-confidence.
Right.
And as your self-confidence grows, self-confidence is attractive. It's not just sexually
right.
attractive. It's also relationship, friend attractive,
right.
personality attractive. I mean, we talk about it. They don't use the word too much anymore, but it used to be a popular term, charisma. Somebody who had charisma.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Somebody who yeah. had charisma. Nobody could really say what it was. But
that's
person,
more of a
so
masculine
like
term. Yeah.
Usually, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it's more of a masculine term, so you don't have to say another, like, somebody that you're, you know, I don't want to say non-attractive, but it doesn't sound as sexualized, I guess, as attractiveness, or they're very
mm-hmm.
attractive. There's something attractive, but they could say they got charisma. They got
yeah.
they got pizzazz, right?
They got the it factor. That was
yeah.
a phrase for a while.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
the it factor is confidence, self-confidence. And when you have self-confidence, people just find you.
Right.
So if you really want to use the law of attraction in order to expand the network from a point where you don't really have much of a network, that's where building the love, the self-love really, really helps. because all of a sudden people start noticing you who weren't noticing you before.
Right, right.
And that's a big deal, especially if you're somebody like me. I mean, I was like the super introvert of all time. You know, I was the wallflower that was so wallflower that he was hiding behind the wallflowers. I mean, it was not a pretty sight, let me tell you. And if I had only understood this one thing, the value of building self-love, it would have made a huge difference in my life. I actually, at the time, if you had asked me, I would have said, well, of course I love myself. And the fact is, we do. We all do. We love ourselves to one degree or another, perhaps, but we all do. But what we fail to recognize is just because we have X amount of self-love doesn't mean we can't have X plus 5 or X plus 10 or X plus 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever. We can still have more of it.
Right.
And the sort of the corollary that goes along with my self-love theorem, if you will, is that when you reach a certain point, a certain saturation point, everything above that in terms of the self-love that you build just spills out all over the place. In a good way, in a very good way.
Right.
And then, I mean, it's almost impossible. That's where you have to start, you know, beating them off with a stick. It's the opposite experience from what you were describing.
And
the experience that I knew very, very well, where you don't have a network going on. There's nobody that you can think of. I used to complain about that regularly, quite a bit when I was younger, about how there's nobody I would even trust to tell anything to. To share anything with.
Right.
And what I didn't realize was I kept telling myself that story over and over again. And so by the law of attraction, I got it.
Right.
If I had realized that, I probably would have at least switched the story around, even if I didn't know how self-love worked.
Right.
But I didn't even know that much was true. And so I just kept setting myself up over and over and over again. There's nobody I can talk to. There's nobody I can trust. There's nobody who's there to help me. Mm-hmm. I remember reading Napoleon Hill. You mentioned him, you know, Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
He mentions the mastermind, right? He brings up the mastermind concept. Group, And so I thought, oh, great. I'll create a mastermind group. Didn't have the faintest clue how to create it. Because I didn't understand the value of self-confidence or self-love. And I didn't understand the importance of not telling the story over and over again about how I didn't have anybody in my social circle. If I had known those two things, I would have had that mastermind group in a snap. But I didn't have it because I had it all twisted around. I had it all turned around backwards.
Right.
So that's what I would say to him. What would you say?
Yeah. Well, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying. The other aspect, too, is that You know, we're always surrounded by people, and whether you're in school or whether you're in business, there's people there, and they really own different titles. So, you know, you have these different, career coaches. There's different folks that are there to listen. You know, and some of them, you know, I think, are better, I'm sure, than others. Some will just, you know, hey, you're paying me. Yep. I'm going to be a yes man. Others are going to be like, dude, you know, until you change your story, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to move forward. So, you know, and then of course there's obviously, if you need to talk to, if you absolutely have no one and you're still working on that self-love, you can also, you know, maybe start with a school counselor or, you know, your counselor or whatever, somebody in your corner, at least, that is, they may be very neutral. But at least it's going to be a start for you. But start somewhere. But I think self-love is huge. And I would completely concur with what Walt is saying, because that is the ultimate path that is going to lead to what I would call the biggest riches, you know, where, you know, the biggest, networking, whether it's, really, you know, ultimately the love that you show for yourself. That really is the biggest thing. It's not other people. It's the love that you share with yourself. So.
Oh yeah. We're the biggest beneficiaries of that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We are. It not only our emotional state, but our physical states are, you know, everything, is a residual byproduct to self-love, and, our paychecks. In fact, did a interview with a veteran entrepreneur, kind of a coach guy that I know yesterday. And we talked about in length about the, you know, he designed a program called, you know, Design Your Own Paycheck, and really about that invisible number over each of our heads, what we believe our self-worth is and about, you know, how, where do you start to change that? Because if I went up to somebody in high school to say, how much do you believe that, you know, you should get paid at a job when you, you know, get out of high school? And they may say $30,000 or whatever the case is, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's interesting. If I went up to some adults, you know, how much money do you believe that you should make, or you, that you're worth, more, maybe more importantly, you know, surprisingly, I think that number would be way low.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's, but there's a lot of stories. Not only do we tell ourselves about money, but that we choose to believe because we've been told, you know, money's the root of all evil. You know, it's going to, you know, big numbers go to your head. That's all ego, blah, blah, blah. You know, stories go on and on instead of going, no, damn it, you're worth that and more.
Right.
So why not change that number? And it doesn't have anything to do about money. That's the funny part. Right. It does, but it doesn't. And it's all about self-worth. And the more, again, you go back to your, the core principles of what you're talking about, Walt, about self-love, self-value, the more you build upon that, then it expands and flows over, right? And that next promotion shows up being like, hey, Walt, we'd love to have you head up our department. I know it's a step up from where you've been for the past few years. But, you know, we just love your energy. We love, you know, so they, you know, again, you got the charisma, you got what they, you got the moxie kid, right? The old,
right.
And they, but you know, why would they pick somebody that is mopey and not positive to be around? Nobody, like, you know, it. No. And even if you're good at what you do, and
right.
Understandably, you got to have the skills to back that up. But, at the same time, you got to perform at the next level. Get that. But at the same time, we've all seen it time and time again. The person that whole has a charisma, typically, beats out somebody that, you know, maybe has less experience, but has, you know, that energy about them that, you know, they have a confidence and be like, yeah, I could really see myself training this individual. I know they'll be great. I know they'll take charge. I know they'll do awesome. I know they'll take the company to the next level. Why wouldn't they hire him? So,
now, there is,
or give him the promotion.
As you were talking there, it did occur to me, there is one thing specifically about money that will influence us as we get older to accept a lower valuation of ourselves. And that's just simply the nature of money as it currently operates, because money is expansionary. The money supply is constantly expanding. And what that ends up doing is that over time, the purchasing power reduces. So if I look back to when I was growing up at what, you know, $1,000 bought, sure, compared to what $1,000 buys now, it's a very significant difference, you know?
Yes.
It's tremendous. Like five to 10 times different from what it,
yes,
was when I was growing up. You know, if we don't adjust our minds to
right,
recognize that monetary value is shifting constantly, that the purchasing power is probably not all that different now compared to then, maybe a little bit less when you take into account people tend to make more money and so forth. But the mindset about the dollar, yeah, amount, that's, mm-hmm, the thing that you can kind of get hung up on. So you have to keep adjusting that over time, recognizing, yeah, the purchasing power in terms of the dollar amount is changing. And we have to,
right,
adjust ourselves to keep up with that and even surpass it once we realize through self-love. That's where the self-love piece really comes in. It becomes,
yep,
easier to just, you know, dive into, oh, yeah, I'm worth X. And before I was,
yep,
settling for X divided by 10. You know, it the self-love just makes it easier to do that.
Well, to be really honest, I think personally for me, I think we give way too much of our emotional energy away into the energy of what money is.
Mm-hmm.
And money really is just a physical object It really has no, when you really look at it, it's just a piece of paper, that an organization gives its worth to, right? It's got the denomination on it. The aspect of, you know, when we take away the emotional energy or attachment to it and really look at it as a tool to do, you know, what can I do with, you talk about the you know, the money, you know, like, so if 20 years ago, $1,000 or even 50 years ago, $1,000 in 1970, like you said, was worth way more than it is now. I get that.
Yeah.
Even 20 bucks, right? 20 bucks. Right. You thought you were rich. You could buy
20
tons.
Was a lot of money at that point.
Oh,
yeah.
you buy the penny candy aisle right out with that. You know, and there's probably a penny what? maybe I'm dating myself now.
That's the $1 Milky Way that you're talking
yeah.
about.
You get a dollar and you thought you went to heaven. even 25 cents sometimes. But the thing that I would share is, yeah, you know, even a quarter, right? A quarter was like, here you go, Sonny, you know, and you got it from grandpa or even mom or dad. And that was huge. I, you know, I think about that too, like growing up, you know, a tooth, let's just say this. I know it's abstract, but, it's like, a tooth. I was lucky to get a quarter. Now, good Lord, like a tooth is going like for a buck. I mean, making like, and I get it. That's all up to what parents can afford. And that's, they set that and that's your own personal deal. But, I think it's just interesting because money changed, but really again, getting back to it. If we detach from the emotional attachment from money, and for me personally, to look at it as a tool and saying how many tools, well, I don't, you know, it sounds kind of weird, but how, you know, instead of going, oh my God, that's $1,000. Well, really it's, you know, boy, you really can't buy much anymore. And granted, I get that, but, you know, yeah, does your way of thinking need to stay fluent? Absolutely. Sometimes too, if you think about it, a lot of stresses, a lot of things in the world start. And one of the biggest things is financial stresses.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because the emotional attachment of, you know, in fact, was less than a half an hour ago. I cut a pretty significant check for a guy that just left doing, some texture and sheetrock stuff. I mean, you know, it was, mm-hmm. You know, but again, it was like, okay, he did quality work. He put right. in his time, but yep. you know, go back to again, if you went back to 1970, what would that same work be? I don't know. Of course I was just a kid, but, you know, maybe was that 300, 200 back then? And that was a tremendous amount of money.
It was, yeah.
Be like, oh my God, you're going to charge me. You know, and now that's, you know, approaching 2000, you know, it's
right.
like
sure.
the same work, you know, it's like, I don't know, you know, maybe I'm 200, maybe I'm, you know,
you're not too far off. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I've actually studied it and you're, you know, 10 times over for that time period. That's yeah. usually, you know, it may be closer to 15 to 20 times over. But the
sure.
point is that, you know, it does happen. And I think there's another component that we ought to touch on in the last minute or two here. And mm-hmm. that is the energetic component, because that's what money
yeah.
really is. Money is energy.
Yep.
Energy is money and money is energy. It's a way yep. of exchanging energies. It's a way of exchanging our best efforts and our abilities and our ways to contribute to each other's lives, but it's energetic. And when we think about it that way, now it becomes easier to kind of let go of that number, you know? I was going through, I haven't done my first public speech that I get paid for yet, right? But I had mm-hmm. to set a price for it. And I sat down right. to figure out that pricing, and I really didn't know what to price it. So I started, you know, checking out other speakers to see what they charge and so forth. And at first I had a little sticker shock.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into getting those gigs.
Yes.
There's a lot of work that goes into preparing the talk. There's a lot of work. And I just kept working it out and realized, you know, the kind of numbers that they were putting out there actually made sense.
Right.
It wasn't this like big, you know, cash grab. It was,
right.
okay, yeah. I mean, it really does cost that much.
It does.
Really do have to collect that kind of money,
It does. Well, and a lot of people don't realize they're, and especially we're living in a different time as well. And there's a lot of different associated costs too when doing professional work, even like myself, right? And, when people talk about, being a it doesn't matter if you're a medium or a speaker, but, right. Whatever your industry is, I guess. And when you look at that, there's a lot of associated costs. So, talking about maybe for me, for example, there's, their websites and maintenance of scheduling platforms. And, because I don't have a staff, it's just me, right? And
right.
So, and then office supplies and, I guess memberships to, online web platforms to be able to do what so things that are business aids or business supplies, things to help you conduct the business and provide the services to people out there looking for it. And then same with, I talked about that contractor that was this year, pretty proud of the fact that he just bought a new compressor and, all this, mm-hmm. That stuff's expensive and it's an investment, for the individual's business and it helps them do a better job of what they do. And, so there's all kinds of different industries, but yeah. So when you talk about speakers, absolutely. There's always, whether somebody is doing professional development, taking courses or learning to speak better, whatever the case is, right? They're reading books, they're maintaining websites. There's the time, because so many times, good Lord, I know I've been there a million times myself. As an entrepreneur, we're great when we come to small business about accounting for all the business aids, business supplies, all the bits and pieces except one piece, our damn time. Mm. And that is valuable as well. And it regardless is. If you're directly working with a client or not.
That's right.
And so when you're actually putting that on paper, the first person that's got to be okay with that number again starts with you. Because if you don't believe in the price that you're kicking out, and I know I've had this issue with myself, in the past, then you're going to be kind of squeamish about talking about it. Okay. But if somebody goes, well, what do you charge? And if you just come out and go, Joan, I charge $10,000 per speaking engagement, whatever the price is. I don't care right. if it's 10 grand, 5 grand, whatever. Wherever you're at, that's okay. And if they go, oh my goodness, and saying, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's the price. Mm-hmm. And if you choose to change your pricing, that's up to you. But here's what I'm going to share. Again, it goes back to self-value. It goes back to what you believe in. You have to believe in you and your product. And if you don't, then you won't be able to sell the price of whatever you're trying, whether it's your, you coming across as a speaker and asking, so much money per speaking engagement, or as a psychic medium and so much per, reading or whatever you do, again, maybe contractor in each job, right? And maybe it changes with the,
your bid.
Yeah, maybe, but here's what I'm saying. If you don't believe in you, your customer won't, because they won't feel it. Be like, well, he's not confident or she's not confident, and saying, why would I hire them? They're not, they felt like they were reaching. They were needy,
Exactly.
And the other times that I thought, God, I'm going to help a client or, people out. And I will say this is, I have, my readings are significantly higher maybe than some others, but here's what I'm going to share is there was a time, maybe not that long ago, maybe 6-8 months ago, that I dropped the prices on, I think it was half hour readings, something. And I thought, oh my God, it was right when COVID first started, I think it was or something. And I was thought I would, I'd just do this crazy sale and, not only generate some income, but also give people a break that been wanting readings. Mm-hmm. Guess what? I think I had one person take me up on it.
Yeah.
And I was really kind of perplexed, and I don't know why, but I kind of said something to my wife, and she was like, well, you know why, don't you? And I was like, no. She was like, because it comes off needy. Like, you know, if your prices are X and then all of a sudden you drop them, it's like, all of a sudden people don't see the value in your product.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm not saying that you can't have sales, not saying that you can't give away things or whatever you would like to do as a business owner. I'm just saying is, you know, if you take away, and it's so interesting, the psychology of it, but when you're genuinely trying to give people a break and saying, I'm just going to significantly, maybe it's over 50% off, whatever. And it's sometimes it's just like, really? Yeah. Like you're saving hundreds of dollars and you're not going to take, and it's just like, okay, well, fine. And then later on, then you increase it up to full price and saying, well, if you would have a week ago, I had these on sale for, you know, whatever it was.
Right.
And it really kind of interesting, but I do know for a fact people at times, appreciate or get more out of services if they have to wait, say something's very significantly priced and they really want to do it. Say maybe, well, let's just say a concert. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ooh, those prices are so pricey, but I love Cher. I want to go see Cher. I want front row, whatever, but they're hundreds of dollars. Oh my goodness. I wouldn't, you know, I don't know if I could afford that, but if they save and be like, you know what? This is several months out. Hopefully we still have tickets. And they're saving and they're saving and they're saving. And they finally get enough to go out and have a fun night at a Cher concert. And they buy the tickets and it's a significant purchase for them. Typically, right. Maybe they don't have maybe a lot in the way of financial means, but they make the commitment to do that because it's something that they want to do. And I have found from experience that people get more from that because they are making a, how do I want to say, more of a commitment. It meant more to them to save.
They're emotionally as well as financially invested.
Yes. And they're like, we're all in. We want to, and I will take the time to save to make that bigger purchase than, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, folks that get the nosebleeds at a cheaper price can't enjoy the same show. Sure. I'm just saying there is something about the people that, you know, saying, you know what? Wow. That's a huge, huge commitment, but wow. I really want to save. I really want to do this. And typically it's something that we can't afford, but we really want to do this.
It's a good point. You know, and it's a great way to bring the show to a close today. So thank you for making that. Beautiful. Really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you very much. And thank you, especially to Daniel, to send in your question because look what it led to. It was really, really good. Make sure you use the Elevate Today app to send in your questions as well. And Dean, we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. I just want to add, Walt, and remind everybody out there that at LOA Today, we see you, we love you, and thanks for your questions.
Excellent. I love the way you summarize that. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Have a great day.